The Columbia Workshop.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Columbia Workshop presents the eighth program of a series devoted to experimental radio. Your letters on last week's program, in which we dramatized Jonathan Swift's The Voyage to Brobdingnag from Gulliver's Travels, were very interesting and welcome. Thank you. Tonight, the workshop is proud to turn over its resources to Orson Welles. Some months ago, Mr. Welles produced Shakespeare's Macbeth for the Federal Theater. It was received with the most enthusiastic response accorded Shakespearean production in years. He is now busily engaged rehearsing for one of the leading roles in Sidney Kingsley's new play, 10 Million Ghosts, and also producing his own version of a French farce called Horse Eats Hat. Between both rehearsals, he has managed to write a book called Everybody Shakespeare. We have asked Mr. Welles to arrange and produce Shakespeare's Hamlet for the workshop. He will also play the leading role. But first, a word from Mr. Welles.
In deciding to present an abbreviated version of Hamlet, the Columbia Workshop found itself facing a considerable dilemma. Would it be feasible, we wondered, to give merely the plot in our short space of time, or should we concentrate on certain well-known passages and let the story proceed confusingly? Our final decision was this: to present to you the first two acts of the play, retaining, whenever possible, the most notable scenes in their entirety, and giving you, we hope, a clear, dramatic statement of the causes of Hamlet's tragedy.
Hamlet by William Shakespeare.
It is midnight, and before the castle at Elsinore, a sentry stands at his foot.
Hey, answer me. Stand and unfold yourself.
Long live the king.
Bernardo?
King.
You come most carefully upon your hour.
It is now struck 12. Get thee to bed, Francisco.
For this relief, much thanks. It is bitter cold. But I am sick at heart.
Have you had quiet guard?
Not about stirring.
Well, good night. If you do meet Horatio and Marcellus, the rivals of my watch, bid them make haste.
I think I hear them.
Stand ho! Who's there?
Friends to the crown.
And liegemen to the Danes.
Welcome, Horatio. Welcome, good Marcellus.
What has this thing appeared again tonight?
I have seen nothing.
Horatio says it is but our fantasy, and will not let belief take hold of him touching this dreaded sight twice seen of us. Therefore, I have entreated him along with us to watch the minutes of this night, that if again this apparition come, he may approve our eyes and speak to it.
Tush, tush, twill not appear.
Sit down a while, and let us once again assail your ears that are so fortified against our story, what we have two nights seen.
Well, sit we down, and let us hear Bernardo speak of this.
Last night of all, when yon same star that's westward from the pole had made his course to illume that part of heaven where now it burns, Marcellus and myself...
Please, break me off!
Look, where it comes again. In the same figure, like the king, that's dead.
Shall I strike at it with my partisan?
No, it will not stand.
It's here!
It's here!
Do it wrong, being so majestical, to offer its show of violence.
It was about to speak when the cock crew.
And then it started, like a guilty thing upon a fearful summons. But look, the morn, in russet mantle clad, walks o'er the dew of yon high eastward hill. Break we our watch up, and by my advice, let us impart what we have seen tonight unto young Hamlet. For upon my life, this spirit, dumb to us, will speak to him.
In the great hall of the castle, the court is assembled. Hamlet, a sober figure in black, stands apart from the rest. On a dais sits the king with his newly wedded queen. Suddenly, a trumpet blares forth. And the king rises.
Oh, yet of Hamlet our dear brother's death the memory be green, and that it us be fitted to bear our hearts in grief, and our whole kingdom to be contracted in one brow of woe. Yet so far hath discretion fought with nature, that we with wisest sorrow think on him, together with remembrance of ourselves. Therefore, our sometime sister, now our queen, the imperial jointress to this warlike state, have we, as 'twere with a defeated joy, with one auspicious and one dropping eye, taken to wife. Nor have we here in Bard your better wisdoms, which have freely gone with us to fare along. For all our thanks. But now, my cousin Hamlet and my son.
A little more than kin. Less than kind.
How is it that the clouds still hang on you?
Not so, my lord. I'm too much in the sun.
Good Hamlet. Cast thy nighted color off. Let thine eye look like a friend on Denmark. Do not forever with thy veiled lids seek for thy noble father in the dust. Thou know'st his common. All that live must die, passing through nature to eternity.
Aye, madam. It is common.
If it be, why seems it so particular with thee?
Seems, madam. Nay, it is.
You shall not go, my lord.
Hold up your hand.
He rules, you shall not go.
My faith cries out and makes each petty artery in this body as hardy as the Nemean lions and nerve. Still have I called. Unhang me, gentlemen. By heaven, I'll make a ghost of him that left me. I see a way. Go on. I'll follow thee.
Whither wilt thou lead me? Speak. I go no further.
Not me.
I will.
My hour is almost come, when I, to selfless and tormenting flame, must render up myself.
Alas, poor ghost.
Pity me not, but lend thy serious hearing to what I shall unfold.
Speak. I am bound to hear.
So art thou to revenge when thou shalt hear.
What?
I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night, and for the day confined to fasting fire, till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away. List, list, oh, list. If thou didst ever thy dear father love...
Oh, God!
Revenge is foul and most unnatural murder.
Murder?
Murder most foul, as in the best it is. But this most foul, strange, and unnatural...
Haste me to know it, that I, with wings as swift as meditation on the thoughts of love, may sweep to my revenge.
Now, Hamlet, hear... Sleeping within mine orchard, my custom always of the afternoon, upon my secure hour, thy uncle stole, with juice of cursed heaven and in a vial, and in the porches of mine ears, did pour the leprous bitumen, whose effect holds such an enmity with blood of man, that with a sudden vigor, it doth profit the thin and wholesome blood. So did it mine. Thus was I sleeping by a brother's hand, of life, of crown, of queen, at once dispatched.
Oh, horrible, oh, horrible, most horrible.
If thou hast nature in thee, bear it not. Let not the royal bed of Denmark be a couch for luxury and damned incest. Fare thee well at once. The glowworm shows the matin to be near, and him to pale his ineffectual fire. Adieu. Adieu. Hamlet, remember me.
Remember me. I know, poor ghost. My memory holds a seat to this distracted globe.
Welcome, dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Moreover, that we much did long to see you, the need we have to use you did provoke our hasty sending. Something have you heard of Hamlet's transformation? What it should be, more than his father's death, that thus hath put him so much from the understanding of himself, I cannot dream of. I entreat you both, that being of so young days brought up with him, that you vouchsafe your rest here in our courts some little time.
so by your companies, to draw him on to pleasures, and to gather whether aught to us unknown afflicts him thus, that opened lies within our remedy.
Good gentleman, he much hath talked of you, and sure I am two men there are not living to whom he more adheres.
We here give up ourselves in the full bent to lay our service freely at your feet to be commanded.
Thanks, Guildenstern, and gentle Rosencrantz. And I beseech you instantly to visit my too much changed son. Go, some of you, and bring these gentlemen where Hamlet is.
The heavens make our presence and our practices pleasant and helpful to him.
Aye. Amen.
My liege, madam.
Now, what says Polonius, our Lord Chamberlain? He tells me, dear Gertrude, that he hath found the head and source of all your son's distemper.
I doubt it no other than the main. His father's death, and our o'er-hasty marriage.
My liege, madam, to expostulate what majesty should be, what duty is, why day is day, night night, and time is time, were nothing but to waste night, day, and time. Therefore, since brevity is the soul of wit, I will be brief. Your noble son is mad. Mad, call I it, for to define true madness, what is to be nothing else but mad. But let that go.
More matter, with less art.
Madam, I swear I use no art at all. That he is mad, 'tis true. 'Tis true, 'tis pity, and pity 'tis true. And now remains that we may find out the cause of this effect, or rather say, the cause of this defect.
How may we try it further?
You know, sometimes he walks 4 hours together here in the lobby.
So he does indeed. Look, where sadly the poor wretch comes reading.
Away, I do beseech you, both away. I'll board him presently.
Oh, give me leave. How does my good lord Hamlet?
Well, God of mercy.
Do you know me, my lord?
Excellent well. You're a fishmonger.
Not I, my lord.
Then I would you were so honest a man.
Honest, my lord?
Aye, sir, to be honest as this world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000.
What did you read, my lord?
Words, words, words.
What is the matter, my lord?
Between who?
I mean the matter that you read, my lord.
Slander, sir, for the satirical rogue says here that old men have gray beards, that their faces are wrinkled, their eyes purging thick amber and plum tree gum, and that they have a plentiful lack of wit, together with most weak hands.
Though this be madness, yet there is method in it. Will you walk out of the air, my lord?
Aye, into my grave.
Indeed, that is out of the air.
How pregnant sometimes his replies are.
My honorable lord, I will most humbly take my leave of you.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I will more willingly part with all. Except my life. Except my life. Except my life.
Fare you well, my lord.
These tedious old fools.
You go to seek the Lord Hamlet. There he is.
God save you, sir.
My honored lord.
Oh, my.
My most dear lord.
Good friends. How dost thou, Guildenstern? Ah, Rosencrantz, what makes you at Elsinore?
To visit you, my lord. No other occasion.
Beggar that I am, I'm even poor in thanks. But I thank you. Are you not sent for? Is it your own inclining? Is it a free visitation? Come, deal justly with me. Come. Come. I may speak.
What should we say, my lord?
Well, anything but to the purpose. I know the good king and queen have sent for you.
To what end, my lord?
That you must teach me. Oh, by the right of our fellowship, be even and direct with me, whether you were sent for or no.
My lord, we were sent for.
I will tell you why. So shall my anticipation prevent your discovery and your secrecy to the king and queen moult no feather I have of late. But wherefore, I know not, lost all my mirth, forgone all custom of exercises, and indeed it goes so heavily with my disposition that this goodly frame, the earth, seems to me a sterile promontory, this most excellent canopy, the air. Look you, this brave o'erhanging firmament, this majestical roof, fretted with golden fire, why, it appears no other thing to me than a foul and pestilent congregation of vapors. Oh, what a piece of work is man. How noble in reason. How infinite in faculty. In form and moving, how express and admirable. In action, how like an angel. In apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world. The paragon of animals. And yet, to me, what is this quintessence of dust? Man delights not me. No, nor woman neither, though by your smiling you seem to say so.
Oh, my lord, there was no such stuff in my voice.
Why did you laugh then when I said man delights not me?
Well, to think, my lord, if you delight not in man, what lenten entertainment the players shall receive from you. We coated them on the way, and hither are they coming to offer you services.
He that plays the king shall be welcome. His majesty shall have tribute of me.
There are the players.
Ah, your hands, then. Come, you're welcome. But my uncle, father, and aunt, mother are deceived.
In what, my dear lord?
I am but mad north-northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw.
We'll be with you, gentlemen.
Mark you, Guildenstern, and you too, Rosencrantz. That great baby you see there is not yet out of his swaddling clouts. I will prophesy. He comes to tell me of the players. Mark it.
My lord, I have news to tell you.
My lord, I have news to tell you. When Roscius was an actor...
Oh, the actors are come hither, my lord.
The best
actors in the world, either for tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral, pastoral, comical, historical, pastoral, tragical, historical, tragical, comical, historical, pastoral, scene, indivisible, or poem unlimited.
You are welcome, master. I am glad to see thee well. Come, come, we'll have a speech straight. Give us a taste of your quality. Come, a passionate speech.
What speech, my lord?
I heard thee speak me a speech once, but it was never acted, or if it was, not above once. The play I remember pleased not the million. It was caviar to the general. One speech in it I chiefly loved. It was Aeneas's Tale to Dido. If it live in your memory, begin at this line. Let me see. The rugged Pyrrhus, like the Hyrcanian beast. Not so. And it begins with Pyrrhus, the rugged Pyrrhus, he whose sable arms, so proceed you.
The rugged Pyrrhus, he whose sable arms, black as his purpose, did the knight resemble, when he lay couched in the ominous horse, hath now his this dread and black complexion smeared with heraldry more dismal.
Say on, come to Hecuba.
But who, oh, who hath seen the Moblet Queen?
The Moblet Queen.
That's good, Moblet Queen is good.
Run barefoot up and down. A clout upon that head, where late the diadem stood, and for a robe a blanket, in the alarm of fear caught up. But if the gods themselves did see her, then when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport, in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamor that she made would have made milch the burning eyes of heaven and passion. In the gods.
Look, whether he has not turned this color and has tears in his eyes. Pray you, no more.
That is well. I'll have thee speak out the rest soon. Good, my lord, will you see the players well bestowed?
Come, sir.
Follow him, friend. We'll hear a play tomorrow.
Now I'm alone. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his own conceit that from her working all his visage waned, tears in his eyes, distraction, introspect, a broken voice and his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit? For nothing. For Hecuba.
What's Hecuba to him, he to Hecuba, that he should weep for? What would he do had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears and cleave the general ear with horrid speech. Yet I, a dull and muddy metaled rascal, peak like John of Greens, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. No, not for a king upon whose property and most dear life a damned defeat was made. Am I a coward? Who calls me villain, breaks me pate across, plucks off my beard and blows it in my face, tweaks me by the nose, gives me the lie in the throat as deep as to the lungs? Who does me this, huh? Zounds, I should take it, for it cannot be that I am pigeon-livered and lack gall to make oppression bitter. Or ere this, I should have fatted all the region kites with its slaves. Oh, bloody body villain. Remorseless, treacherous, lecherous, kindless villain. Oh, vengeance! Why, what an ass am I. This is most brave that I, the son of a dear father murdered, prompted to my revenge by heaven and hell, must like a board unpack my heart with words and fall a-cursing like a very drab scullion. Fie upon it, fie. about my brain. I have heard that guilty creatures sitting at a play have by the very cunning of the scene been struck so to the soul that presently they have proclaimed their malefactions. I'll have these players play something like the murder of my father before my uncle. I'll observe his looks. I'll tent him to the quick. If he but blench, I know my course. The spirit I have seen may be the devil, and the devil hath power to assume a pleasing shape, yea, and perhaps out of my weakness and my melancholy. And he is very potent with such spirits. Abuses me to damn me. I'll have grounds more relative than this. The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king.
You have just heard a condensed version of William Shakespeare's Hamlet. The cast included this evening the King, played by Alexander Scourby, the Queen by Rosamund Pinchot, Polonius by Egerton Paul, Horatio by Sidney Smith, the Ghost by George Gall, Bernardo by Hiram Sherman. This program was arranged and directed by Orson Welles. Irving Reese directed the radio effects.
The Columbia Workshop would appreciate your comments on this production. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.